from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. Well, it is Friday, and you can bet executives at the state's top tech firms cannot wait for this week to be over. That's because yesterday was another bruising day of stock market losses. The Dow fell more than 500 points, and this is having real-world impacts. Facebook, on the week, lost at least $15 billion in market valuation. Google, $36 billion. And Apple, I hope you're sitting down, Apple employees, $54 billion, and on and on. Now, we know what the losses mean for those companies, but what does it mean for the smaller investor, the ones who are funding startups? To answer that, we're joined by venture capitalist Venki Ganesan at Menlo Ventures. Venki, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we reported yesterday that almost $1 trillion in tech value has been wiped away by the stock market in the past month. What does that mean for you at the ground level in Menlo Ventures?
Right now, it means nothing. We are in a long-term business where the investments we make today plan to go public 5 to 7 years from now. So it doesn't change the ground reality of what we are trying to do, but it changes the psychology.
So when you say that it changes the psychology, what do you mean exactly by that?
I think everyone gets affected when there are big movements in the stock market because it shifts the psychology from greed to fear. And fear is paralyzing. And therefore, it posits volatility. Volatility in the market causes people to stop and say, do I still want to continue? The psychology around what you do today matters.
Are you seeing, I know it's only been a month or so, but are you seeing any of that fear psychology creep into everyday actions in the Valley?
Not yet. But I'll tell you that what we should understand is that the Fed funds rate, which has been in zero for a long time, since 2009, the Fed had kept interest rates at zero, have started creeping up in the last 6 months. And this does have a real impact on capital flows. When the Fed funds rate was zero, a lot of money got pushed into risky assets. When the interest rates go up, people take the money out of risky assets and put them in bonds. And that will have an impact long term on investing in startups.
Venki Ganesan, a partner at Menlo Venture. Venki, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to move on now. Asian American state lawmakers are urging Governor Jerry Brown to immediately pardon dozens of Southeast Asian refugees who are facing deportation. KQED's Hope McKinney reports.
The refugees, mostly from Cambodia, are permanent legal residents. But because they have previous criminal convictions, they've been detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement and could be deported before the year's end. Assemblymember Rob Bonta says most of the longtime California residents have served their time and are now contributing to society, and ICE shouldn't be targeting them.
California immigrants are under full frontal assault from the federal administration, period.
Angela Chan of the Asian Law Caucus says these refugees are facing deportation in part because of state policies.
California's prison boom and harsh criminal laws over the past 3 decades have contributed to the criminalization of many Southeast Asian Americans who came to this country as refugees and were resettled by the U.S. government in low-income communities that were over-policed and over-criminalized.
A pardon from Governor Brown would allow the refugees to reopen their cases in immigration court and fight deportation. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKinney.
We're going to go now to Southern California, where more than a half century ago, the Santa Susana Field Laboratory west of Los Angeles experienced a partial nuclear meltdown. Now, decades of radioactive and chemical pollution have followed, and the planned cleanup, expected by 2017, has not happened. So now the lab's neighbors want California's gubernatorial candidates to promise a crackdown and get it cleaned up. Here's Chris Richard.
At a demonstration outside Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom's Los Angeles campaign headquarters this month, Denise Duffield of Physicians for Social Responsibility said she only wants state regulators to deliver what they promised.
There is a signed, legally binding agreement that all of the contamination would be cleaned up by 2017. The cleanup has not yet even begun.
The State Department of Toxic Substances Control now says the cleanup may continue through 2034. Duffield says even worse, the DTSC is considering leaving up to 90% of the contamination behind. Demonstration organizer Melissa Bumstead says that's way too much. She blames contamination from the lab for her daughter's leukemia.
I have no trust that they have any intention to actually do the cleanup.
I think they'll just continue to push it off and push it off and push it off.
A DTSC spokesman has not provided comment. After the demonstration, the Newsom campaign released a statement supporting a cleanup without further and unnecessary delays. Bumstead said a representative of Newsom's Republican opponent, John Cox, also has expressed interest in a meeting. For the California Report, I'm Chris Richard in Los Angeles.
Let's go to the Bay Area now, where lawyers representing nearly 70 San Francisco tenants have just filed suit against the city's biggest landlord. KQED's Monica Samayoa has more.
Veritas Investments owns nearly 300 buildings in San Francisco, many of which were acquired in the last decade, and tenants are claiming living conditions are unbearable. Madeline McMillan has lived in her building for 25 years.
I feel very unsafe due to the lights being out in the front of my apartment building, and it is very dirty because no one is there cleaning it up. They shut the power and the water off at a very short notice.
Attorney Ryan Velasic says some tenants are getting eviction notices demanding money they don't owe.
Every one of the plaintiffs in this case has experienced some form of an attempted wrongful eviction.
In a statement, Veritas disputed all claims that it's been hostile or negligent towards tenants, adding that city data contradicts the allegations against it. Veritas currently faces three other lawsuits from tenants in other buildings. For the California Report, I'm Monica Samayoa.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the healthcare they need on the web at chcf.org. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing, through science, the interdependence of all living systems. And posterpresentations.com, helping researchers, healthcare professionals, and students print award-winning scientific posters. posterpresentations.com/NPR.
When Republicans in Washington passed a $1.5 trillion tax cut last year, they thought the legislation would be a political trophy to brag about in the midterm elections. But as KQED's Guy Marzorati reports, that has not been the case in Orange County.
Orange County has long been considered the epicenter of anti-tax sentiment, but the Republican tax bill could end up hurting many Californians, especially those living in wealthier places like Orange County. That's because some common deductions for state income and property taxes will have a new limit. Carolyn Cavecci is president of the Orange County Taxpayers Association.
They will next year when they sit down to fill out their federal tax forms. I think all of a sudden when they get to that bottom line, there's going to be a what the heck is going to happen, especially in Orange County.
Only one Republican congressional candidate in the region, Mimi Walters, voted for tax reform. So the party is shifting to another tax issue in their attempt to hold on to vulnerable House seats, the newly enacted statewide gas tax, which pays for road repair.
Well, the gas tax is a great issue for us.
Fred Whitaker is the chairman of the Orange County Republican Party.
Because the gas and the vehicle license fee are probably the most unpopular thing the legislature has done in the last 2 years, if not the last 10.
Republicans are pushing Proposition 6 to repeal the gas tax increase. And though it's not a federal issue, Republicans in Orange County are tying the repeal to their own congressional campaigns. Josh Newman understands why. He was an Orange County state senator until last June, when voters recalled him from office, largely over his support for the gas tax.
And the thing about a gas tax is, you know, you're sort of aware when you watch the little wheel spin on the gas pump. And that's one of the few interactions people have with taxation that is so top of mind.
The gas tax repeal has largely overshadowed federal tax reform on the airwaves, according to an analysis of congressional ad buys, and it has also split Democrats in the OC. House candidates Gil Cisneros and Harley Ruda are supporting the tax hike, while fellow Democrat Katie Porter is opposed. But Carolyn Cavecci, who leads the Orange County Taxpayer Group, wonders if other issues will overshadow taxes in November.
Sometimes I wonder if issues like, you know, the federal tax cut and in this gas tax, if it's all just going to be kind of lost in this massive, loud noise.
For the California Report, I'm Guy Marzorati.
All right, so yesterday we talked to Jacob Soboroff from MSNBC about a piece he did in Orange County about youth voting. If you missed it, you can hear it on calreport.org. But the gist of it went, young people don't like to vote. Well, that led to a wider discussion at De Anza High School in Richmond yesterday. Here are some seniors from teacher Erica Webb's English class.
Hey, I'm Mohammed.
Hi, I'm Saul. I'm a senior at De Anza.
My name is Naya. I'm a senior at De Anza. I think young people think that their vote doesn't count.
Usually we weren't taught it as kids, like growing up, oh, you know, you got to go out and vote once you're 18, you know.
But I think it's like a domino effect. Like if one person's going to think that, then another person's going to think that, and then like everyone else is going
to
think that.
People just see it like, oh, yeah, I guess it's time to vote now. They don't really think about it as a main priority.
They either don't know how to vote, they were never taught how to vote, or like they don't have enough time to vote.
Right now we're mostly worried about school, and since we're all seniors, so like we're trying to stress out with like we just had our SATs, you know, between all the schoolwork and stuff. Not really a lot of time to keep up with like the news and stuff.
No, my friends don't talk about politics.
Nah, we don't really keep up with politics.
If we see it on like social media, like on Snapchat or Instagram, we might take a quick look at it, but we don't talk about it with each other. We just see it. We just, you know, scroll right through.
As a young person, what would motivate me to go out and vote is to get more informed.
I think just being a little more exposed to it, so that's like a little more on our part, but I think it would be also nice if like we get helped out in school.
Teaching us about it in school, teaching us how to vote, actually where to go and vote.
Even if like they just show us like a little clip or something about what's going on just to keep us updated, so you know, then we'd be more tapped into, you know, the world's problems.
And then we would know how to go and vote for who, and vote for the good or the bad.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Those were high school seniors at De Anza High School in Richmond. Well, we're going to look now at the sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. Yesterday in the San Francisco Bay Area, sex abuse survivors took to the streets to protest someone they say is a known abuser who is working at a graduate school in Berkeley. Here's KQED's Rachel Miro.
Don Bosco Hall in Berkeley is run by the local Salesian Order, which operates with the permission of the Oakland Diocese, which is why SNAP, or Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, held its press conference outside the diocese. Joey Piscatelli says Father Stephen Whelan abused him when Piscatelli was a high school student. He sued in 2003 and won, only to discover Whelan listed in a recent official Catholic directory as working at the school.
I would like to see this priest be kicked out of ministry like he should have been when he was found liable for child abuse. According to their own zero tolerance policy, a priest who's found by a jury trial to be a molester should have been removed.
Oakland's bishop recently promised to release the names of those church officials considered credibly accused. San Diego and San Bernardino have already done so. But a lawsuit pending in Los Angeles claims Catholic institutions continue to move around accused individuals to protect them from prosecution. Melanie Sakota, also with SNAP, says she doubts bishops will release all the names they know about.
Well, part of the problem is that very few of these priests have ever been criminally convicted, which means that they are on no sex offender registry. Nobody knows about them.
The Oakland Diocese told KQED the bishop has no authority to kick Whelan out of the diocese since he's not a priest now, but working in the school's back office. Neither Whelan nor the Salesians responded to requests for comment. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro in Oakland.
Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Seal Muller, and Rob Spade. I'm John Sepulvedo. I hope you have a great weekend.